Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Divi Nation. Divi Nation is a podcast and video show by Elegant Themes, the creators of Divi, the ultimate WordPress theme and visual page builder. The goal of Divi Nation is really simple. We want to provide you with the knowledge, insights, and supportive community that you need to be successful with WordPress and Divi. I'm your host, Nathan B. Weller, and as your host, it's my job to facilitate that success by having various guests from the Divi and wider WordPress community onto the show to share their stories and experiences with you. In this episode, I interview Meg Long of Meg Long Creative, which is her one-woman web design shop based out of Los Angeles, California. Meg is one of those guests that I get to meet on the show for the first time, and that's because someone in the community nominates this person or a person to be on the show based on the really cool work that they feel like they're seeing, and they want to hear that person's story and ideally get some tips on how they can have the same kind of success. Well, after getting to know her a little, to see her work firsthand, it's no mystery to me that she was nominated to be on the show. Meg seems to be one of those web designers who really gets communication. It's obvious looking at her website and her work that she's able to put herself in her client's shoes and find out what problems that they're having that she can solve, and then bring a lot of other really valuable skills and insights along the way as they work together. And we talk about all that and a lot more in today's episode of Divi Nation. Here it is. Meg, welcome to Divi Nation.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having me.
So good to have you. You're another one of the guests we've had on the show after just kind of publishing to Facebook, like, hey, you know, we need nominations. And I love that because that's basically the community going like, this person over here that you've never met, they're doing something pretty sweet and you should check it out. And I gotta say, I checked out your website before. I always do that. I kind of like to have people's website pulled up while I'm talking to them. And I love it. It's really cool.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
It's new. I launched it in April. And before that, I've basically had a splash page since 2012 or something.
Right.
And I kept saying like, oh, I'll launch it in like 3 months. And then I just kept changing the launch date and then finally got something up. So
yeah, I'm notorious. I'm like the kind of person whose like website is, again, I'm pumping out content for other people's projects for like the last, you know, 10 plus years, but my own website is like neglected.
Yeah, story of my life. That's why I always tell clients would like, potential clients will get me on the phone or something and be like, so now I can't find your website.
You're, I'm like, no, yeah, that's it.
It doesn't exist. Yep, you're right. It's totally fine. The classic case of cobbler's children have no shoes or whatever that phrase is.
Totally.
Yeah.
But your portfolio looks great. And one of the things I like about your website is you're one of the people who kind of gets the whole conversation concept of like how your copy is a conversation, and so you don't like slam people with your services like on the, you know, on the big call to action or whatever, and you don't like immediately demand anything. You're just like, hey, let's talk, you know. And then you have like, as you scroll down, you're introduced to you, to your way of working, to your portfolio, and then at the very bottom it's like, here's how I can help, you know. That's cool. That's, I think, that, have you found that to be more effective than having a splash page with just like get in touch about website stuff?
Yes. I was a little unsure when I launched it if I would see a drop in inquiries, because I thought maybe there was some magic sauce about having just the splash page. Like, I look like too cool.
Yeah. You know, you're like, it's so too desirable. Busy making cool
shit.
Exactly.
You know. Right. Exactly. But no, I've had like a lot of really good feedback. I've actually had people, you'll see on the site, I have like a bulleted list at one point of like, you know, here's how, you know, here's things I might be able to help you with, or, you know, why I mean, might be a fit. And I've literally had people copy and paste bullets where like, these are the bullets that apply to me. And I didn't expect that to happen, but
that's really cool.
It seems to really resonate with people. And I've had a few clients book me, they said, because they could tell that I was more passionate about like small business and problem solving than I was about just the aesthetic side of things, and people, that seems to connect with people. So.
Yeah. Well, what I love about your copy is you really, especially in the problems I can help you with, the bullet points that you just mentioned, you write those from the client's perspective. Like, it's, you know, you're not connecting with your target clients. Your site isn't converting. Your branding doesn't reflect. So it's like, you took the time to get into the head of your client and go like, when I'm looking for a designer, here are the problems that I have. Here's the things I'm trying to solve. And so when they see that, they're like, okay, this person gets me. I'm working with them.
Yep. Yep. I think it sets the process up also from the get-go of like, we're here to solve problems.
Yep.
And if the conversation even early on starts to get into like, but I don't know what colors to do. And I'm like, totally fine. Yeah, that's okay. We're not even there yet. Like it kind of keeps it focused on like, but what's our strategy? What, why are you coming to me? And let's focus on that first.
Do you ever get people who contact you and you think like, well, they've contacted me, they've put a few bullet points, but then they don't know how to continue on that thread. And they're just like, no, tell me what the design is. And you're like, well, we can't work together now.
Somewhat, but I don't know. For some reason, I think most of my clients, I don't know. They like, I feel like once I get talking about the strategy, I try and shut down any other conversations right away. And if they don't like that, then it's just, we're not a good fit, clearly.
Yeah.
Which is totally cool with me. I think there are other designers who, I don't really consider myself as the aesthetics. I don't, well, maybe you think so. I don't think I have a super strong, consistent aesthetic style. That like every site is the same. Like some, I do a little more editorial.
I see like from your portfolio. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Your website looks really consistent, but yeah, you mean like from site to site.
Your portfolio, right. Site to site. Yeah. I've done some minimal stuff. I've done, I think someone once described it as like whimsical editorial, which I think is about the closest to a style that I come to. But
yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
Yeah.
You're like the kind of editorial style that my wife would want basically for her website.
Cool.
So maybe I'll recommend you to her.
Yeah. So I think like, because this, I don't know. I don't usually get a lot of people coming talking about aesthetics right away. I think they understand, like, I'm going to help them solve a problem and they want to talk about that.
That is really cool. Well, let's get a bit of your backstory and let's hear about how you got to where you are now. When did you start designing, or was design sort of like your business model now, something that you adopted or learned as a problem solve?
I don't know. I think I fell into design actually because I was always a fine artist, like growing up. I was all into like photorealism, drawing and all that stuff. And then like a lot of people couldn't afford to go to art school. Art school is insanely expensive.
Oh yeah.
So I got into like SCAD, and then like I saw how much it would cost and I was like, no way. My parents were basically willing to pay for a state school in state in North Carolina. North Carolina has like amazing state schools. So they're like, go to one of those and it's free, or you can go to art school, but then you're gonna have to pay for some of it. And I was like, yeah, I'll just do state school.
I gotta tell you, so you dodged a bullet there, man. It's like,
I think I did actually.
It's like $100,000, no exaggeration, to go to like an actual art college. Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. So I ended up going to this big state school, called NC State, and I was majoring in English, thinking like, well, I'll do English cause I was also interested in writing. And then eventually I'll go back to art. I'll save money and go to art school or whatever. And then I saw people on campus walking around with portfolios and I was like, oh, that's, you know, like there must be some kind of art thing. And it turned out there was a design school. So I applied
within the state school,
within the university. Yeah. There was actually a design school. So I applied to it, totally thinking like I had no interest in actual graphic design. I'd taken like a Photoshop. This is like when Photoshop, I think when I was in high school, Photoshop was still kind of new. So I'd done Photoshop and I don't know. I thought
you just done your first lightsaber photo, you know, like like everybody did when they got into it for the first time.
I made myself into a mermaid at one point. It's the most embarrassing thing in the world. Yeah. So I didn't think I was really into graphic design because that's what I thought graphic design was. And I thought like the selling out version of art, you know, like graphic designers for people who couldn't hack it in real art or something. So
I understand. I mean, obviously we're wiser now, but I can see how people would think that.
Yeah. So I got into design school, and then after I got in, I actually found out it was like an insanely difficult school to get into. And I'm so glad I didn't know that up front, cause I would have flubbed the interview, I'm sure. But yeah, I ended up falling in love with design while I was in school, and they really modeled a way of thinking like about design thinking and problem solving. It really was kind of the same philosophy that I use in my business now. They really taught that in school. It was less about teaching you skills, in terms of like the software, and more about teaching you how to think. And then you learn the software as kind of how to solve those problems that you're learning how to solve. And then I worked as a lead designer at a marketing firm while I was in school to pay the bills. And then,
was that like internship that turned into a job, or was it just like you got an actual job while in school? Cause that's a pretty big land.
It was a pretty big land. Honestly, like I had done some print freelance work, early on, as soon as I sort of started getting those software skills, I was, you know, doing a little freelance. And then, I got I had a friend of a friend who had had the job before me, and they kind of referred me to it. Mm-hmm. And they were actually, they wanted someone who had print skills, but they also needed someone who does web design. And at the time I had absolutely no web design experience and had no interest in doing web design, which is like a theme of, with me of like, I have no interest in doing anything. I'm just going to do it for now. And then I end up falling in love with it. Yeah. So I got the job kind of promising her that I would learn web design. And then I learned WordPress, like how to make my own theme. Mm-hmm. And then learned HTML and like divs and CSS and then started doing little websites for like my at the time boyfriend's sister, is now my sister-in-law. Just little things for people, you know, like really terrible early websites. I made my husband's like early acting website when he was still acting. Like nice. I remember learning how to do rollover buttons for the first time and I was like, oh, I'm the coolest person ever. Yeah, it was like little random stuff. And then I moved to LA. I got another job at a marketing firm. I was in a marketing department at the LA Chamber of Commerce, actually. Mm. And I was doing a lot of writing and a lot of graphic design. I kind of made my own position where I was doing both. Doing a little bit of website design on the side still. And I don't know if I'm talking too much, but.
No. I would like to interject a quick question. As you were getting into your professional life, you're kind of exiting school. Did your background in English and writing abilities like have anything to do with the path that you took or the success that you've seen?
Yeah, huge. Actually, I think it's funny you say that. I hadn't really ever thought about that, honestly, but that was a big factor in all of the jobs that I've had. When I first moved out to LA, I got that marketing job, and it was probably more my English skills originally that landed me the job. I think they weren't as much looking for a graphic designer at the time. And so I was doing a lot of copy editing and marketing and all that stuff. And then because I had graphic design skills, they were like, oh, well, can you, I don't know. I started doing random news design, email marketing. I always forget like, you know, my own trajectory, but yeah, I was doing a lot of email marketing early on, which, you know, of course is like, I was doing kind of both the writing of what would go in a newsletter and also then learned how to do the HTML and design of all that stuff. Yeah. So,
well, it's like the old adage, you know, like clear writing is clear thinking, you know, like, so it's like if someone can communicate an idea in written text, then you know that they understand that idea. And so they can then, not everybody, but they have, I think, a better possibility of then turning around and making that into a visual concept as well as a written concept, because it proves that they get it.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with that.
So let's talk about getting into freelancing. So how long did you work at these agencies or these marketing firms or whatever they actually were?
Yeah, I worked at the marketing firm in college until I graduated. And then I moved to LA. And then I worked at the Chamber of Commerce in the marketing department for about 3 years. Mm. And then I had been doing, like I said, kind of like freelance work on the side. Yeah. And then I did a website for my friend. I traded her doing her website. She was a wedding photographer. Hmm. And in exchange, she shot one of my other friend's weddings. It was like
nice.
This sort of gift. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Cool.
Yeah. I used this platform Showit, you know, I don't know if you've heard of that.
No, I'm not familiar.
Okay. It's like very, very niche specific to photography. So I was using it. She wanted to use it for her site. So I used it for that. Through Showit is actually how I met Melissa Love. Melissa Love.
That's where that is kind of ringing a bell is because, now that I think of it or now that you bring her up, like she totally talked to me about that in the past. Yeah.
Yes. So she used that platform also. So she and I ended up at the same design retreat back in like October 2012 for a lot of Showit designers.
Is that like the Vegas one? The big one?
Not the Vegas one, but there was like a little Santa Barbara one that they did.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Just for like 15 people or something like that. There was very few people using
that community platform. Seems so... Like, I don't know. It seems so weird to me that photographers would just get together like at these conventions and talk websites. It's just like it seems odd. It seems like, you know, you would get like a bunch of web designers to go somewhere and talk about painting. It's like, I don't understand, but I love that it exists because it creates all these cool opportunities for folks like yourself. But do you have any idea why that's a thing?
No, I don't. Honestly, it's definitely weird. I mean, when I first encountered this community, like I was coming more from, you know, doing HTML and CSS and kind of more the like, I don't know, just it's a very different world, the sort of like developer it tends to be a lot more masculine, like mm-hmm. small business website world. And then going into this like photography website world was a very different type of community. Very cool. But yeah, it's a different
What
market.
Does that change like? And obviously I'm not a woman, so I don't know what, you know, the agency life is like from that perspective. But like, is mm-hmm. it, did you find it really kind of freeing creatively to break out on your own and just be like, not just the breaking out on your own and getting to be your own art director, but literally getting to express yourself in a way that's not so like male corporate?
Yeah, it was fun. It's funny because like I feel like the way I communicated changed. Like my emailing is, you know, like way more casual and filled with exclamation points
and smiley
emoji.
Faces and stuff.
Yeah. It feels like in the, like when I have a male client now, it's like it tends to be the, I don't know, for whatever reason they tend to default more to the like the traditional
sure, yeah.
emailing,
you know? The kind of sparse.
Yeah, the and point. Then I'm like, do they not like me? Because they didn't include like 10 exclamation points at the end of their sentence. I'm like, no, this is normal. Like, I'm just, yeah. I've gotten so into this world of like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I went down the happy emoji rabbit hole too far.
Yeah. But yeah, I think, I don't know, it's been really, it's been like a fun market to get into because everyone is a creative and mm-hmm. so they appreciate the kind of way I think. And
yeah, yeah.
That's creative thinker, and they tend to trust my aesthetic a little more than someone who doesn't have a creative background.
Right, so, right. Well, and that's yeah. how I've noticed on your portfolio here. It's like you're doing websites for people who are creatives, like they're painters, they're photographers, yes. they're like chefs or restaurants, or they're crafters or something like that, which is pretty
yep.
sweet.
Pretty much, I've tried to focus in on creative small business owners. That's pretty much my focus.
Nice. That's very cool. Yeah. Well, so that was the start. Going to these conferences was the start of your freelance career. Talk about what got you from, you know, what was maybe some of your first client work like, and down mm-hmm. the road, when did Divi enter into the picture for you?
Yeah. So I was doing a lot of stuff with Show It, and at the time that wasn't, mobile friendly at all, really.
Mm-hmm.
So as mobile started to get bigger and bigger, I started working more with WordPress, which I had some experience with in the past, but that was more in like trying to build my own custom theme, which,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. Was that just because you had seen that, you know, like responsive design was easier to execute through WordPress, or did you just feel like it was helpful in other ways too?
Well, I guess, yeah, helpful in other ways too. I think a lot of my clients were focusing more on blogging. That was
okay.
kind of also
sure.
blogging was a big thing. And
yeah.
Especially in within the industry that I was focusing on, a lot of photographers.
Literally
were seeing,
anyone who's creating their own content all the time, like
exactly.
a photographer or somebody, like they need a blog for sure.
Exactly. Right. So more and more people wanted blogs, more and more people wanted mobile responsive. So I started doing more and more WordPress. And then I was experimenting with a couple different themes. And I really like to find like a theme and fully commit to it and
yep.
learn it inside out. It's mm-hmm. just more efficient for me, obviously. So I had heard about Divi through Melissa Love
mm-hmm.
and asked her, was kind of asking her some questions about it over Facebook message. And yeah, decided to try it. I think last year was my first Divi site with this client, Amber Housley, who's still like, I think my favorite site that I've done. And
I see it here.
Loved
yeah.
it.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, I really loved it. And just the flexibility, and I was so pleasantly surprised by how easy the interface was to use on the back end, and mm-hmm. the fact, oh my gosh, I can't tell you how excited I was about like padding and margins, negative
right,
margins,
right.
like built in. I was like, oh my gosh, I can do like overlapping layouts, and I'm not
yeah.
having to fight with the theme. Like, it was like a whole new world.
Yeah, it's like after using it for a while, you really do forget that stuff as simple as like creating columns. Or
oh, yeah.
section
uh-huh.
like
totally.
That stuff is not normal. Like that, just
oh,
those
yeah.
like
yep.
super basic things that are at the core of the editor itself or of the Divi builder itself. Like those
mm-hmm.
are not standard features across WordPress.
No.
So like you get another theme, it's like, well, I would like there to be two columns here. It's like, no,
you I'm gonna
have
to use a plugin
that.
Or something.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
That.
It's like
yeah, totally.
You have to use like hand, you know, inline, you know, short codes or something like that. Which
yep.
So.
I was having to create my own little div. Thing. Like create a short code and apply a div to it and then
yep.
code on the back end. Yeah, like
I mean, I did all that before I started using Divi myself. It's funny, like I, you know, before I came on board with Elegant Themes, you know, like I was a Divi user. Like I thought it was a cool
mm-hmm.
theme and I was building, you know, my own projects with it. And then I was like, oh, I'd like to write more about this, you know, and that was
yeah.
kind of that. But yeah, that's so awesome that you're so new to the community in a certain way, but your work is like, you know, super impressive. I love that you've just jumped right in and embraced it. How many projects do you think you've done, with Divi since you kind of adopted it?
I think it's about 10 now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And is that all you try to use now? Because it's like you said, you're trying to commit and just makes everything easier, I'm assuming.
Yeah. For the most part, I have clients coming back to me still who want, because for a while I was doing a lot of contract work with another designer who focused primarily on Squarespace.
Okay.
And also that Show It one. And so I still do some of that, but the vast majority of my work now is in Divi, and I've been trying to sell Divi to everyone, basically.
Very cool, very cool. What has been has there been any changes to the way that you work, aside from, you know, like the easy access to the settings, like the padding and stuff like that? But has there been any like big overarching change to the way that you approach a project because of this tool?
That's a good question.
I asked not to get a plug for Divi. I asked because everybody watching or listening to this uses Divi, and one of our favorite things to do on the podcast is share these like little insider tips of like, oh yeah, so here's this thing that saves me like, you know, 2 hours every week or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's all I'm asking for. I don't feel obligated to be like, I just think Divi's no. But like, if you have like a cool hack or like some workflow that you developed, that would be really cool to share.
I don't know that it's hard to know like what you're doing that's more efficient or good that maybe other people aren't doing, you know?
True.
I just know what I do, but I do start all my projects in Illustrator, which I used to not do.
Oh, interesting.
And I try and like design, I try and design in such a way that I can easily kind of get everything onto its own artboard and export everything so that when I'm starting in, when I actually get into the development in Divi, I can very quickly just start, like, I go back into Illustrator, I see what my padding is and all that stuff, and I just start, like, filling that in Divi.
Yeah,
and I do a ton of my work in CSS. Like, I use Divi for all the basic stuff, and then I do a lot of extra tweaking, and I try and give myself, like, one challenge of something new that I've never done before for
each project. Yeah, that's cool. Well, yeah, so you're not the only person who uses, like, Photoshop or Illustrator to kind of map it out. But I mean, it's funny to me to hear that sometimes, because that's really the approach people take when they're hand coding a site. You know, like, you kind of have to have a lot of confidence in your theme being flexible to do that.
Yeah, you know? That's like, true. Yeah, that's very true, which I do. And I sometimes like get myself into work myself into a corner, you know, where I'm like, oh crap, I've done this thing that I thought I could do and I can't easily do it. But I have honestly never run into a problem where I've designed something in Illustrator and I truly cannot do it in Divi.
Yeah.
There's some, you know, I might have to figure out some jerry rig way to do something, but I've always been able to figure it out, which has been really fun.
Yeah, because at the early stage, I mean, you're selling your client on the Illustrator doc, right? Like you're saying, like, here's a mock-up, you know, what do you think? And they're like, go build it. And then you're like, oh crap. Hopefully not, but I mean, like, it's always a possibility. Very cool. So like, we're getting to that stage in the podcast where we're kind of trying to identify something that that you've learned along your journey that you would like to share with the community. And I usually tell people, and we spoke about this beforehand, it's like, what would, if you were going to give like a local TED Talk or a WordCamp presentation, like what's that super impactful wisdom that you've gained through hard experience that you would want to share with people who are doing what you do? We can jump around a bit, but like, Start us down that path, if you will.
Sure. One thing that stuck out to me when you asked that originally, and I was kind of thinking about that, was I feel pretty passionately that I feel like I'm in control of the process with design when I have a client. And whenever there's a problem with the client or something with the process, I try and think of it as like my problem. Like, this is something that I did that I need to work on, that I can improve on. And I feel like almost always when something is going wrong, it's like I can trace it back to either a mistake I made or a boundary I haven't set or, you know, just something that I can improve in my process. It's not always the case because, of course, there's always just difficult clients and, you know, hard things. But I think I see a lot of stuff, not so much in the Divi groups, but in WordPress. There's almost this, like, WordPress it's kind of just a designer culture thing in general to kind of complain about clients and be like, I hate this client. and I think that's like really defeating because, it puts you in this position of being antagonistic against your client. Yeah. Like there, you have to fix, I don't know. Like, and I think it's better if you can think of it like, okay, well, if there's a problem, like you are in control of this process, so you can fix this problem. Like, you know, you're the trusted expert. You're the one who knows what's going on. So I don't know. Now I feel like I've worked with a lot of clients for a while. I was doing like, I don't know, I have a ton of clients a month. So I feel like every client I have, I learn something new about things that I can improve upon. And at this point now, the process usually goes very smoothly, but it's because I think I set very firm boundaries.
Yeah. What are some of those boundaries that you've set? Like were there different points where you got burned and you're like, you know, really tempted to go off and then you realize, well, this is a me problem, not a them problem per se.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, there's been so much stuff like that. Like I think, one example is, and you always learn something cause clients will surprise you by finding ways around your process. You're like, oh, got to fix that for next time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chaos. One of the things was, like I've had, early on I wasn't limiting revisions or I was giving way too many revisions, you know? So of course then you have clients who like go on and on and on and they give a million changes and then you're like, oh my gosh, this process is taking forever and it's been 6 months and it's bleeding into my other stuff. Mm-hmm. So then I started putting into my contract, like limiting, you know, very specific rounds of revisions, like one round of revisions on the homepage, one round of revisions on interior pages, one round of, you know, tweaks on, the developed site and like very limiting it. And then as I go along reminding the client, like, okay, we've done our one round of revisions. Anything beyond this is going to be my hourly rate and kind of just reminding them of that early on. Mm-hmm. So that it doesn't feel like I'm punishing them when they get to that point.
Right. Right.
They do. And then, even like within that, even with the revision stuff, like I was having clients like, you know, who might send one revision per email or, you know, per Basecamp message. Cause I use Basecamp.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So then I changed it to like one round of revisions counts as like one message. Like you have to get that all into one message. So that forces them to sit down and like,
they can't just be like, here during my first round of submit of changes that has taken me 2 weeks to submit, you know?
Right. Exactly. So things like that. I mean, I feel like you just learn as you go along, but yeah, just being super clear with them up front and in the contract, like I bullet all of this stuff out and then refer back to it so that it never feels like I'm being mean or like just setting a boundary like to get at them or because I'm so great or because I'm such, I don't know, but it's more just to remind them like, this is for your benefit. Like I want the process to go smoothly for you. I want to be able to launch quickly. And this is all part of that.
It seems like to me at the heart of this issue of like setting boundaries and, creating, you know, constraints within which like everybody, yourself included, and the client needs to operate. At the core of that, there has to be this like realization of self-value. Like you have to go, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm not here to be, you know, taken advantage of. I'm not here to be someone's, you know, web design slave or whatever. And then, and you don't have to, like you said, you don't have to be antagonistic towards them. Instead, what you got to do is like, just live in the recognition of your own awesomeness and your own value. It's like, you know, like my time is valuable. My skills are valuable. You know, I have things that I've learned that I'm bringing to the table, which are valuable. And when I set a price, you know, there's not a lot of extra stuff that comes with that per se that just is like free because I know it or because I can do it. It's like, of course I can do it. Like, that's why you're hiring me. But that's extra, you know? So we're going to create some boundaries. Was there a moment where, did you ever have a period in time where you were getting kind of overworked or just kind of snowed under by the lack of your boundaries, lack of this, these constraints?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. I mean, all of this stuff is like, I've learned through being in the fire with it, you know, like, I launched my business, like officially in 2013 and I quit my full-time job because I had gotten featured on this, thing called Creative Live. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but
No, I don't think I have.
It's kind of like Lynda training. Like they do training. It's a lot of like training for designers and photographers, but it's free. So you can watch it live online. And I just happened to have my name mentioned, some of my work featured on this one that had like 60,000 viewers.
Oh, wow.
And I ended up getting enough inquiries that day to quit my full-time job and go full-time business. which I never planned to do at all. I was always going to just do freelance on the side. So I feel like I got thrown in without knowing at all what I was doing. I had like 40 clients on the calendar that I didn't know how to manage. Goodness. Like, it was the worst. Like, I made so many mistakes and was working like, I mean, I was working all the time. I had no work-life balance, no social life. So yeah, I think, yeah, for sure. To answer your question, yes, I was definitely in a position where I was making all the mistakes. And feeling really insecure and not confident in my pricing and giving discounts. And I kind of just learned the hard way that that's not good for anybody. It's not good for me or for my clients.
Right. And I've actually found too, that like clients appreciate it when you come into the relationship with that knowledge of your own value. I mean, that's to a big extent, that's part of like the draw of an agency is like, you're sitting down with this like executive who's like, we're awesome. We're so good. And you're like lucky to work with us. Like that's kind of like the message you get like from body language and tone and like the setting you're sitting in this like posh like office space. And I think as a freelancer, when you can bring that to the table, like just the sense of your own value and, and a set way that you like to do business that, you know, works, people are like, oh, thank goodness. Cause I feel like I have no idea what we should be doing. Cause this is not my specialty. And then, and a lot of times I think, you know, that can weed out bad clients, quote unquote bad clients, because I think sometimes the nightmare clients are just people who are fed up with their partner not knowing what they're doing or giving the impression that they don't know what they're doing. So they're like, I don't know either, but here's like a bullet point list of things that you should do because I just think something needs to get done, you know? And it's like,
I think that's so true. I think that, there's a lot of nightmare clients out there who I think are just products of bad experiences where they become these micromanaging things because that's like what they had to do in the past with, you know,
They just want to see that something's happening. And if they, if they don't have the confidence that you're guiding the process, you know, even though it's not their wheelhouse, they're happy to jump in and make sure they're getting their money's worth, which is probably not good for anybody.
And I've honestly never had, I can't think of an example where I've set a boundary or stuck to my gun with pricing or something like that, where it hasn't been good. Like I've almost always had people say like, oh, okay, great. Well, I'll just book you with the highest package then. Or, I just had somebody recently who was kind of pushing something or wanting to not do a part of my process. And I just said like, you know, I've, like not wanting to do a Pinterest board, for instance, which is like a thing that I ask for my clients to do. And I kind of just explained to her, like, I've had people in the past who don't do this. I understand like you don't want to do it right now and I know you're busy, but when people don't do this, it tends to make the process go longer and it just doesn't go well. And like, so for that reason, I just have to like, that's what I require. And I totally understand if you can't do that, but if so, we would just have to cancel. And she was like, oh, okay, no, I'll totally do it. You know, like people respect that because I'm not just, I think there's a difference. Like if you have confidence in yourself and your value and you know that these things are there for a reason, it's not like you're just being petty and mean and being like, well, no, you have to do this. Cause I said so. It's like, you're helping them.
You're not just giving them a list of arbitrary to do's like, oh, here's your part of the thing. It's like, no, this all factors into the final product. It's really important. So I was going to ask is maybe you could just walk us through your process and your pricing model. We got this awesome, mini series on the blog right now. It's two of four posts have been published and then we're getting ready to publish three and four in the next couple of days. And it's on Divi website pricing. It's by one of our contributors, Josh Hall, does a lot of cool stuff for us. But I'm always curious is like, you know, what different design is their approach to both pricing and the process and how those things match up. So maybe you can walk us through your version of that.
Yeah. So I do, set package pricing. I try and veer away from hourly. Although I do track my hours with each project just so I can make sure that, you know, I'm being profitable. So my highest package right now includes like logo and brand identity and, website design and development. And that's $4,900. And if you just do website, it's $3,900. And then I do like a just brand identity design thing that's $1,900. And then I do like a quick custom logo that's $900.
So when you have these flat rates, I mean, I imagine that makes it super important on your end to know exactly how long these projects are going to take to get done. Cause you can't be like dragging them out forever. So what does that look like?
So I have a very specific list of to-dos. I could actually show you
Sure.
We have two do's here. So I use the Pomodoro method. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not, but I am collecting all of these methods right now. So I have this little pet project where I'm taking like stuff like the best self journal, full focus planner, bullet journal, all these different 5 minute journal, all these different planning and journaling like methods. And yeah. I'm trying to find some way to do something cool with them with Divi. But anyway, what is this specific one?
Okay, so I use a combination of Pomodoro and bullet journaling.
But so I'm familiar with bullet. That's awesome.
I am. Yep. So I do Pomodoro is where you work for the classic version of it. Anyways, you work for 20 minutes. It's called Pomodoro because it's like they used to have these little tomato timers, like kitchen timers.
Yeah.
And they're called Pomodoro timers. Yeah. So you would do for work for 20 minutes where you are totally focused, no distractions, mm-hmm. no checking email. You are on a task. Then you take a short break. Then you do another 20 minutes and you take a short break and your day is kind of like structured in that way with a few longer breaks spread throughout. I found that with development, it was hard for me to do it in 20 minutes. So I do 40 minute Pomodoros. Mm-hmm. And you can see this is like my very like several month like to-do list here, but I've got my clients listed.
Oh, wow.
And then I have, I don't know if you can see it all, but I've got like these little.
Oh, cool. Are those your hours or your 20 minute blocks or what?
Yeah, they're my blocks. They're so my 40 minute blocks.
40 minute, yes.
And I have a certain amount of blocks assigned to each task, and I have a certain amount of tasks per package. And I try and really stick to those, the time I've allotted, because obviously if it goes too much beyond that, then I'm losing money.
Right, absolutely.
So that's pretty much how I do it. And I also structure my month that way. Like when I'm booking out my calendar, I track how many sessions are going to be in each package that someone's booked. Mm-hmm. And then once I've reached the amount of sessions I have available for that month, I close the month and move to the next month. And then I use my bullet journal for that to kind of track that also.
There's a lot of aspects to this though that depend on the client working with you. So, I mean, I can only imagine that you have very specific requirements on them. Like you have to get stuff to me at this time.
Yes.
We have to have this meeting and we can't really bump that because, you know, we're on a timeline now. Is that a conversation you have at the beginning and make sure that they're on board with that?
I do let them know that I have everything in Basecamp. That's kind of, I have like a template for my projects in Basecamp where when someone books me, they go into Basecamp. And I tell people up front that all communication has to be in Basecamp. I don't do phone calls. I don't do texting, just to kind of keep everything centralized. Mm-hmm. And I do like a half an hour phone consultation or a Skype consultation at the beginning so we can meet face to face. And if someone really wants to do a phone call, I'll do it. But as a general rule, you know, I try and discourage it because that also helps. I think once you start bringing in other forms of communication, that's when things can start to spiral.
Interesting. Can get into that a little bit more, because I mean, if you're already doing a Skype call, what's the big difference between phone? Or you just mean like in general limiting the channels of communication?
Well, yeah, limiting the channels of communication. For me, scheduling a Skype call where I tell people like, here's my calendar, book a time on my calendar, that gives structure to that communication, as opposed to if I call them, then they have my phone number, and then they can just call me anytime.
And then they can
anytime.
Just, barrage you with, You can ignore Skype messages, but you can't necessarily.
I'm only on Skype to do stuff like this, So, it just kind of limits that, I think, by design. And then, they have their homework that they have to get done. I have like a workbook, a PDF workbook that they have to fill out has information on their style and their background of their business and their marketing goals. And then they submit all their content to me before I begin work with them. So before we do our consultation, they have to do that. If they don't get it done in time, there's a late fee and then they get moved to my next spot on the calendar. And if they're looking like they're going to be late, I remind them of that ahead of time, you know, do multiple reminders of like, hey, just letting you know your content's all due in 2 weeks. I haven't seen anything come in. Just letting you know if it's late, you know, no problem, but there will be that fee and we'll move to the next spot, which currently is like, November or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Like 3 months down the line.
Exactly. And that really incentivizes them.
I bet it does. What's this workbook your PDF workbook, what's that look like?
I designed it in InDesign originally. So, cause had like a specific way I wanted it to be. And then I turned it into a fillable form in Acrobat. So I upload that to Basecamp. It's in 5 parts. The first part is like a basics document where I have their kind of basic contact information and stuff like that. And then I do like a business one about their business and then a style one. And then part of that style one is I give them instructions on filling out their Pinterest board and then they have to put their Pinterest board link into that PDF once it's done.
Oh, wow.
And then a technical document that has all the login information. And then the final one is the content and letting them know how to prep their images for web and some stock link sites in case they don't have images.
That is really cool. That's very much in line with, we did another series on the blog about this, which is just like client documentation, like things that they need, like resources they need and things that will help them just be able to always feel like they have all the information and empowerment from you to use totally. The things that you've created for them, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a huge part of keeping my process like streamlined is having as much information that they can access without me needing to be a part of it.
Absolutely. Well, we're getting close on time. I kind of like to end our talks as often as I can with a closing thought. Something that, you know, if people were to kind of forget everything else we talked about, but they were like, you know, there's one thing that Megan does that is really valuable. If you were to close out with that one thing, what would that be?
Oh, man.
It's a hard one sometimes. Because we kind of jumped around on this one. A lot of times we have like a super specific thing that we really harp on. But I mean, you did talk about boundaries and the importance of having a structured approach. But yeah, what's that one thing if people were going to just forget our whole conversation? You're like, you know what? This is worth remembering.
I would maybe say that setting boundaries is not mean. Like, I think a lot of people see like in groups, a lot of times people are like, well, like, oh gosh, I don't know. Like, I don't want to say that because it's going to sound mean, or it's going to make my client upset or whatever. And I think just to remind yourself that setting boundaries and sticking to your guns on your pricing and stuff like that is actually doing your clients a favor. Like, they actually appreciate that at the end of the day. They want to see someone who is trustworthy and who's an expert. And by you doing that, you're showing them that you're trustworthy and that they can trust you with their project.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Megan, is it Meg or Megan?
Meg.
Meg. Okay. Meg, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate
it. Thank
you. Well, that's all for this episode of Divination. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. I just want to give another big thank you to our guest, Meg Long, for coming on the show. If you have any questions about what we discussed in today's episode, please feel free to leave them in the comments section on the Elegant Themes blog, and we will be sure to respond. Thanks again for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you all around the community. And as always, I'll be back next week right here with another episode of Divination.